WMST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We're going to be at Luna Del Sea on Wednesday. I got a big announcement for the following week. I'm waiting on the mayor, working some things out downtown, working into that next phase. It's all also brought to you by our friends at Goodwill Industries. We'll be talking about the XL Center and putting some people to work in the jobs program, as well as our friends at Window Nation. Two for one all summer long. I'm getting my windows. It's been a couple of years since I got my windows. Big appreciation. And they're local, and we'll be telling you more about them as well. There's nothing more local than WBAL. I love saying that. It's like when I started this, I trained all my guys here to say WNST.
NST, you know,
yeah. Right, the Howard Stern thing was popular.
It worked for Howard Stern, didn't it?
Well, and it's going to work for you, too, Rob. Don, I want you to do the honors here because I don't know Rob well. I mean, people think all us radio guys know each other. I tend to know the 90-year rock guys a little bit better than the BAL guys over
you
the years.
You and I met... You and I met a couple of times. I met your wife a few years ago at the Humane Society at their dog fest. We were judges of the celebrity judges of the dogs, the dog contest.
They wanted me to do that, and I was on a Ravens trip, and they said, yeah. Well, your wife's a bigger celebrity anyway, and she loves animals. So they sent my wife. My wife said it was one of the great days of her life. She
was terrific. Bob Turk was on the panel. Jamie and Cheryl Costello were on the panel. We had a great time.
She was hanging with Jamie.
That was a Hall of Fame. Well, we have, speaking of Hall of Fame, we have the one and only from 1090 AM WBAL news anchor, 20 years. I'm going to connect, Nestor, you and Rob in a moment in a way you're not even familiar with. But Rob.
Well, you introduced me to Rob Roblin 2 months ago, who I watched on TV all my life. I had a lot of with Roblin. I did.
Oh, as did I. go ahead, Don.
Rob's a local. Rob Lang is a local guy. Also, Rob, hard for me to believe because you've interviewed me 9,000 times. Do I have the math right? Are you coming up on 20 years?
It's going to be. I'm coming up on 18 years in July at WBAL. The time has flown quickly. It'll be 20 years in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable.
And here's the thing. I'm not the senior man. Bill Vanko has like 23 plus years. Scott Wyckoff, 20. C4 is behind us, but he's got maybe like 15. I mean, I remember when he started and worked at nights, and I would go on his show. We'd talk about Annapolis. WBAL is one of those great places where you can arrive and you can mark your career in decades. A lot of us are hometown kids. I'm one of them. I grew up in Pikesville. It's technically Pikesville, but we went to Randallstown High School.
I'd say you're a Ram, if I remember.
I'm a Ram. And from the backyard of our house, we could see the WBAL radio towers on Winans Road. In fact, we were so close to the towers, we were in one of those neighborhoods in the days where phones had copper wires. You had better have them insulated or else you picked up your phone, you would be hearing Jay Grayson or an Orioles game or Alan Christian or Bob Jones because you would pick up WBAL over the phone. So the state, you know, broadcasting and journalism always fascinated me. The station always fascinated me because you would see those lights and the 50,000 watt signal as we would travel. We go to Detroit, we go Florida, everything else. You could hear the station along. And I was one of those kids, I think probably like the two of you, loved to listen to baseball at night. So I listened to Orioles games on WBAL. I would also listen to distant signals. You'd hear, you know, WJR out of Detroit or KMOX out of St. Louis. And it, you know, working there, I honestly can tell you is a dream job, and it still is.
Well, Rob, we'd be remiss if one of your buddies and one of my buddies, you talk about the longevity at WBAL. I mean, the one and only John Patty just walked out of there recently after 9,000 years.
It seemed like that. I think, you know, he did. I mean, he was an intern at our coverage of the Battle of Fort McHenry. I mean, he was around that long. And the thing, you know, John is another example of that. And there are a lot of other folks. Not to say that somebody can't come to Baltimore and make a huge impact. you know, and spend decades of the career. One of your recent guests, Jane Miller, is a great example of that. Rob Roblin is an example of that. More recently, Scott Wyckoff is an example of that. 20 years, Scott has had a big impact on the area, on the community. His reporting has, certainly his horse racing reporting, and just finished with the Preakness, has had a huge impact. So we, it is an honor, and it's a real thrill to practice broadcast journalism in your hometown.
Is this the chance where I can do my Alan Prell or do my Elaine Stein? Do I get a chance to do that?
You know, those are two who, again, part of my youth, I once even had, and I've told the story to some others, a long time, this is before I came to WBAL, I had a dream that I was going up the elevator of, I think it was the Hyatt downtown, a glass elevator. And I was on my way to see a blind date because I was going to meet her. And I recently
they did
had
have a
blind
good
date.
Bar at the top now.
And they, had a great bar. And you know what? And that particular woman that I had the blind date with, and we had gone for a drink there. So I was good. And I'm nervous. In walks Alan Prill. And it's like, excuse me. And then in walks Elaine Stein. And then the elevator gets stuck. And that's where it ends.
See, I never met Elaine Stein. I think I was at a charity event with her one time, but I don't really meet her. Alan Prell, rest in peace. God rest his soul. Yeah. Don, do you know the story? Have I told you the story?
No.
Okay. So
I'm going to tell you a Prell story in a minute.
Well, this is all I've got. This is, I swear on my life, this is true. This is 1997, 98, 99, somewhere in there. I'm Nasty Nestor. You know, I'm doing my thing. It's maybe around the time I got the radio station, which was 98. It was in that range. I was at Bohager's. I had won the Best of Baltimore or whatever. I think it was Baltimore Magazine. It wasn't City Paper because City Paper always threw a different kind of party. It was Baltimore Magazine party. And I'm there and a guy comes up to me and I like didn't recognize. He said, "Hey, are you Nestor Aparicio?" And I said, "Yeah, nice to meet you. I hear you're a real asshole."
No.
And he walked away. And that's the only story I have from Alan. And I swear to God, that's a true story.
I mean, my only interaction with him, I was a fan, especially of the yard sale. The Honest Al's, he took Honest Al's yard sale was before there was Craigslist and before there was the internet. There were things on mainly in small town radio called Swap Shop or Tradio, where if you wanted to sell stuff, you could go on the radio once a week. Some stations did this daily. Like I wanted to sell, you know, an old card table or something.
It was
something.
A classified ad show.
And you'd go on there and you did that.
It was
and
like QVC for garage sale.
but a very low budget QVC. And he turned it upside down and made it extremely funny. I mean, when I worked in Harrisburg for 15 years before coming back to Baltimore in 2004 for WBAL. And occasionally I would try to be in the car. It was always Fridays around noon or Fridays 11:30 to be in the car to listen to this on WBAL because it was must hear radio.
Well, certainly the stuff that he and the Voice of Reason did was just you know, it was radio. It was probably as good a talk radio, right, as there ever has been in Baltimore. You meant one quick thing about Prell and then Scott Wyckoff story. And then
you never know where this is going, right? Literally,
no.
Right?
No. Well, Prell, one of Prell's big moments was he chased around Superintendent Stuart Berger.
Stuart Berger, yeah.
Remember that, Rob?
Yeah,
I do. Stuart was running to the elevator and Prowl's putting the microphone.
Yeah.
I can remember calling Stuart. I laughed because Stuart's a good friend of mine. He's been on the show several times. And I'm going, "Stuart, never run from the magazine. Never give them the 60 minutes moment."
Yeah.
Stuart, you're a smart guy.
That was the day you became a communications executive, right, Don?
I was probably Stuart's communications guy then.
Oh, wow.
Stuart, stop running. But the Wyckoff moment, and Scotty will tell you about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of my favorite things that BAL does every year with our good friend Kerry Engel out there at Valley View is whole kids campaign. And I mean, you got people.
Your former bosses.
Come back every year. Nancy Resnick. go down the list.
It's like a family reunion.
It's a family reunion.
Yeah. And former bosses, late County Executive Kamenetz, Kevin, your former boss, and Jim Smith would do poems and everything like that. And that is a tradition. That I love that event.
Yeah, they loved that day. And one day, and Scott was working the crowd, and Nestor, you'll like this because you're a fan of the boss. Out of the blue, Scott Wyckoff turns into the boss. Oh, and yeah. Santa Claus is coming to town like the boss on live radio. I'm telling you, I was laying on the floor. And there's video of that.
Scott there is. And I think we got a very nice donation to the kids campaign for that. I mean, that was cool.
Well, tell Wyckoff, I'll do a duet with him next year. We'll do, bring me flowers or something.
Get Scott on and you guys can talk. But Nestor, you and Rob have a connection that you aren't even aware of. We're going to do some hard news here, but this one I have to bring up because I know Nestor's passion. Nestor, if I had to say who's the number one cat family on the planet, I don't know, believe it or not, if I could choose between you and Jen and Rob and Mrs. Lang. Rob has had two cats, Jules 1 and Jules 2.
Well, right? Jules 1 is my wife. And here's the story about that.
I got to warn you, Rob, Nestor's going to tell you about his.
Okay, very, very good. But six years ago, we lost our other cat, Sadie. And we were always determined after that. And this also happened 10 years ago when we lost another cat. It was 19. We were always determined we were going to own another cat. And bring in another cat into the home. And so she was looking, my wife Julie was looking at the Humane Society website, and she saw a little black kitty named Jules. And she said, my wife Julie said, let's go with this one. You can have Jules 1, the wife, and Jules 2, the cat. And it's great. And 6 years later, everybody is happy. And so, the cat pictures and all that sort of maybe drive the Twitter audience and everything like that. So rather than having a Twitter page for our own cat, for the cat herself, and maintaining that, let her boost my numbers.
Now, I want to ask Mahler this. Rob, we'll put you sure. And I can be reporters here. We're going to gang up on
Mahler. Absolutely.
Don, have you had a pet recently in your life, last 15, 20 years, or no?
When the kids were smaller, we had a cat, and it was just not a nice cat. I don't know.
Okay. So Don is always like amazed that I have a cat. So Rob, full disclosure, I got married in 2003. I had a cat when my son was young, Poe, before there were Ravens, I had a cat named Poe.
Sure.
Because I was a writer as well. And I loved Poe. He was my cat. And then I met my wife and she wanted a cat badly. She had a cat when we met. I was allergic to the cat. She gave the cat away and kept me. Right. And about 8 years into our marriage, it was really kind of rubbing on us that I had to get an animal because she really wanted a cat. And I went very grudgingly into this, but open-hearted, right? So we went out to Baltimore Humane and we adopted Kitty. And we brought her home, and I fell in love with that cat. We named her Kitty because of Springsteen. Kitty's back, right?
Okay,
I was at a Springsteen show the night we brought the cat home. He played Kitty's Back that night. I opened the lyric book, and Kitty's Back. So we went with Kitty, and we loved Kitty. Kitty died the weekend that the Ravens were in Wembley. We lost our cat when we were away. It was awful.
Yeah.
Dude, we didn't make it 13 days until we were back out at Be More Humane.
Yeah.
Adopting. Yeah. I was going to ask you, when you lose a cat,
everybody's different. It is the word, you've lost a member of the family. It's any pets. And look, I have a lot of people who are dog parents and it's the same way. And the dogs treat us differently than the cats do. The dogs have a family. Cats have staff. I think was the old saying.
That's a great line. Never heard it. Great.
Yeah. This is one where you work with, you work for the cat, but you earn their trust, but it's a part of your life. It's a member of the family. And, you know, we were determined, and the time to do this, you know, get the new pet in the home, is it's different for everybody. Sometimes it's just a few days. Sometimes
you couldn't take it, dude. We could not. I canceled a trip to Oakland, California, to see the Ravens play in the Black Hole. I didn't go on a Ravens road trip. That's how despondent I was.
Like, you miss the routine of feeding it. You miss the routine of, you know, having it on your lap, knowing that it's there. Right now she's upstairs hiding under a table. I asked if she wanted to join. Asked if she wanted to join me. He said absolutely not. It's a member of the family. I mean, and it's part of your life. And I know people who have dogs who feel the same way, you know, that is, if you can, and the best way to honor their memory is to bring another one into your life, bring an animal from a shelter, not, you know, purebred or not from a store or anything like that. You know, there are plenty of animals looking for homes, and you bring one into your home.
Well, I knew you guys would bond over cats. We are with outstanding news anchor WBAL AM 1090 on the AM dial, and also an FM station.
101.5.
101.5.
The air 4 years ago. In essence, the station that duplicates the AM signal. It's what used to be called in radio a translator. They have a fancier name for it now. Basically, it helps us cover spots in our signals, you know, that you can't get on AM. They can listen on 101.5. They can also listen, and we have a big streaming audience. We'll listen on remote devices, or we'll listen on their desktop computers, and that helps. That, you know, that's another platform. There are also folks, you know, a lot of folks who follow us and follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and I view that as yet another another platform to get our material out. It's interesting.
Rob, you're in our homes, you're in our cars, as you say, you're in our computers all the time. I want to take the curtain back a little bit, and Nestor knows the industry more than I do, certainly. Yep. But this week, I think it's a great way to sort of talk about what you do. We've had another horrific week in the United States of America, where a mad man, a young man, walks into a school, kills 19 students, two teachers. Breaking news, if there ever was one. Yep. One of the main roles that you play at BAL is sort of the breaking news director. Yeah. Take our audience through what that looks and feels like. So we've got this horrific story or other breaking news. Tell us from the news director, whether it's the owner, Dan Juris, whoever it is, I mean, President,
the general manager,
all the way down. How does that spring into action, and you all make that come to life?
Well, in the case, just the bigger picture, Dan Juris, as our president and general manager, recently became president and general manager of radio, along with television. Our goal, we come to work every day with one word in mind, and the one goal in mind, and that is inform. That's what we're doing for our audience. We're all in the newsroom or in the field. My work the last 4 years has been mainly as an anchor and a studio based. I was a street reporter. I was an Annapolis reporter, and I did that for years. I did street reporting for television in Harrisburg. Now my work is mainly in the newsroom, in the studio. I've always considered myself a reporter first, then an anchor, you know, because you're reporting, you're gathering information, you're calling people, you're checking various sources, checking social media and all. In a story like that, we saw the Twitter alerts, we saw the wires, and it was ABC News. You know, first we heard about, a school shooting in Texas. It's something you monitor, because we don't know how many were killed, if anybody was killed or if anybody was hurt. We have these incidents in Baltimore, on a much smaller scale, thank God, for at least recently. But, you know, we had one in January where at Catonsville High, where there was a shooting at Catonsville High. But in this case, for Tuesday, once we got some very credible information from In this case, it was ABC News, which was our partner, that there was a gunman who shot, and the death toll at the time was two. We went on the air with it. So we have carte blanche to do that. Our news director, Jeff Wade, we'll coordinate with him, but we have carte blanche with the talk show producers, the talk show hosts. We got breaking news. We're going to interrupt. We don't know yet. Doesn't matter what they're talking about, what they're putting on the air, what sort of rants they're doing. It's WBAL News Radio. That's the first mission. That's the thing that this place has done all the time. And so we went on the air with that, and the death toll was two. I was a little nervous after airing that bulletin from ABC, because others were not reporting it. Now, I love to be first on any story, but my goal is to be right before first. I would rather be last than wrong than right than first and wrong. And so I got a little bit nervous. Okay, who's reporting this? And then, okay, you saw the AP dispatch. Then CNN started going wall to wall. And we've got a bank of TVs in our newsroom. Like,
by the way, it is amazing what a source is these days, right? I remember being in a restaurant with my wife when Michael Jackson died. Right. And it was reported by TMZ. And I remember her saying, TMZ, what's TMZ,
That really put TMZ on the map that day, because they were ahead of the story and they did it very, very well. And it was I was in the newsroom that day at WBAL when that happened. And we interrupted the Ron Smith show with a bulletin on that. Tells you how long ago. That was 2009, I believe. And so, there are a variety of sorts. And you have to, as you look at social media, as you look at the emails and everything else, who's telling this and how reliable they are. In a case of an out-of-town, the case of a local, too, if it's coming from an official Twitter official source, it's that you credit them. That's reliable. If it's coming from just, rumor or anything like that, you kind of hold off on it until you can get the information verified. I'll give you a great example and it was really the first time I anchored a breaking news event from beginning to end. Previously, I would do this as a reporter. I might anchor the first bulletin and then go out in the field. But it was in 2014. It was a Saturday morning, the shooting at the mall in Columbia.
Remember it well.
Yeah. Here's what happened. So I was Saturday morning, and I just finished the 11:30 news. Our producer at the time, Chris Kanjursky, who now works for the Archdiocese of Baltimore, comes into the newsroom and says, you got to talk to this guy who just called the studio. His wife is at the mall in Columbia. There's been a shooting and cops are just starting to arrive. And I talked to him and we were running a Ravens show. Keith Mills was doing the Ravens Saturday huddle. I get back to my desk after talking to this guy. I was going to start to work the phones. I had, at the time, I was at a desk with a main computer. On my left, I have kept my laptop on, and I kept TweetDeck up. Howard County Police, they were masters, and this is Sherry Llewellyn's, to Sherry Llewellyn's credit, at the use of their Twitter page that day. We are aware of a possible shooting at the mall in Columbia. We're going, we will monitor and we will continue to provide updates. Well, I had all the information I needed to go on the air. We go right on the air. It's like 11:35. And I report what I was told by this caller, what we were told by Howard County Police. And from that day on, we nearly went wall to wall. Scott Wyckoff happened to be on Route 29 that day, heading back to the station. I think he was bringing equipment back to the station. He calls me and says, I can get off and go to the mall. I said, go. And we, within another 10 minutes, like 11:45, I went back on the air. I think Scott was already in place, and we did a quick update, and then we went back to Keith to regular programming. The noon news started, and at the time, it was all locally generated. We didn't have to go to ABC at the top, and so I did, and much of that newscast was me and Scott, and then that day, it was a freezing day. There had been an ice storm and everything. That was the day of the polar bear plunge was supposed to go off at Sandy Point State Park. They canceled it because of ice on the bay. And that was going to be our lead story. And that had been our lead story all morning. Well, we were reporting this. We broke for a commercial. I did a quick weather report. Then we signed off. And Scott told me, as soon as I get some witnesses, we can go back on the air. No more than 90 seconds later, he calls. And we punch him up, and we're on the air, and we're on the air wall to wall. It turned out that day, without my knowing it, because I was in the studio, and I was monitoring Twitter, I was monitoring Facebook, I was monitoring my email, I was monitoring, you know, and everything. It turns out that day, 98 Rock simulcasted us for a while, and WBAL TV simulcast us for a while. The reason being, it was a Saturday morning. There was no Saturday noon show. They had one a long time ago. So there was nobody in the studio to go on the air. They had dispatched Captain Roy Taylor to the mall. They were showing maps on the screen, and they were simulcasting us. And I didn't know about that until about 30 minutes into it. I looked down at my Twitter while Scott was on the air, and Brian Sears said, you know, WBAL TV should put Robert Lang on the air on camera because he's been a TV reporter. I said, what's this? And then I later learned, you know, that they put us on the air until they could get some people in. And I think it was Jason Newton and Deborah Wiener that day who took over for us. And, you know, it is a constant, it's a very strong partnership between radio, television, you know, AM and FM and all of us. And you know, it's the deadline never stops in a situation like that. That's one of the things I love about radio, and television's become more like radio over the years as cable television development, is that the deadline is constant. And so, you know, we're there to provide the most accurate information. And through that afternoon, you know, we had some folks call in. Ann Kramer, who left the station last year, is now doing some part-time work over at WTOP. And I know Don knows her well, former Catonsville resident, and came in and just was in the newsroom. And he said, we really need to go to the main studio to anchor to do this together. And I said, that's great. I'll tell you what, I'll go to Wyckoff. You go in the studio when you're ready. Let me know when you're ready. And then I walked out of the news booth down the hall into the main studio and across the hall in the main studio. And we were on the air for about 5.5 hours. We had folks call in who were there, including one young man, and I never learned his last name. I never met him. His name was Chris. He was in the Zoomies where the shooting occurred. And we brought his story to air. And the great part about the other very helpful thing that day, as I mentioned, Sherry Llewellyn, and I believe she even speaks at conferences of EMS officials and PIOs about this, is that we put their use of Twitter was brilliant. And then they would have the chief come, you know, do briefings every hour.
Hey, Rob, I wanted to interrupt you there for a minute because as a former comms guy, I always liked, right. I love this stuff. What made, from a reporter's perspective, and I know Sherry, what made Sherry's use of Twitter that day brilliant?
Trusted information.
That's right. It was a constant source of trusted information. And, you know, as questions develop, and you saw this in Texas, sometimes in a situation like this, you report what you know, and sometimes that information is wrong. One of the things that was interesting, and just in covering Texas, and I can do this because I'm not on the ground, and I've been on the ground at incidents like this. You're looking for somebody to give you what's going on and what's yes, it's official sources to give you the most accurate information. And they were a little confused. They were the folks in Texas, and they were responding to the emergency. The media maybe was probably the last thing they needed to deal with. They needed to deal with the parents. They needed to make sure everybody was safe. But once we got that information on the air, we put that on the air. One of the things that was probably interesting about that incident, and sometimes happens with incidents in Maryland, is that the governor was the primary source of information. It was the governor who said that it was 14 kids who were killed, later 19. And so you have to, you quote those sources. And sometimes, you know, the higher up sources can be wrong because they're not initially on the ground, but you report what you know. Right. You know, I learned something from a man named Dick Hawksworth. Well, there are two guys I worked with in Pennsylvania whose styles, on-air styles, and whose philosophy I started. One was Chris Fickus, the guy who hired me at WHP in Harrisburg, brought me from Watertown to Harrisburg in 1989. The other was Dick. Dick was an anchor at WGAL-TV, where I previously worked. And I was in the field. He anchored the morning news and the midday news. And I was in the field for a lot of his newscasts. But it was always a sense as report what you know, admit what you don't know, but don't speculate. Remain calm and repeat. And that's what you do in a breaking news situation.
Rob Lang is here from WBAL along with Don Moeller, our former county executive. Yeah, Rob, you said something that kind of shook me for a minute, because I feel like I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. I cover sports. I've watched my wife at the hospital for 150. I mean, I feel like I've seen trauma in various cases, but I haven't been the guy showing up at Perry Hall High School the way Don has.
I did that. I was there that day.
The cops have to come in, and we learned here this week that this kid had more artillery down in Texas than the cops knew it was suicide to go in. But then there's the part where, like, everybody in the world is waiting for you or Anderson Cooper or somebody to tell them what's happening, right?
Right.
The amount of chaos at any of these at a garden variety murder in Baltimore City, when you show up as a reporter and you say, "I'm a reporter," and the cops have tape and they're like,
right,
crime scene.
Yeah. Right? And stay back there. The PIO will come get you. Yeah.
There's a level of chaos there that, no offense to a clown like me, that John Harbaugh and Chad Steele and the Orioles manager and the sports world of showing up for these orchestrated, getting a press pass and going to the tent and sitting there and watching the golf thing or watching the Preakness thing or whatever it is. Completely different thing showing up at that kind of a crime scene, not being even a newspaper reporter, but now we're all in real time on Twitter. Everybody's at it at the same time, trying to be first, best, and right.
Well, Nestor, it's interesting. And Rob was there at Perry Hall. Rob, I think you may have also been, wasn't a shooting, but it was certainly a mess.
Now, the Rob, I want you to talk about the chaos you find. I wanted to engage Rob on that. Chaos.
Go ahead. Start with that, and then I'll come back.
Well, what you do is, first of all, you put whatever emotions you have, you try to put it in a box. I got to tell you, in Texas this week, it was very hard to go on the air because I was also in the newsroom the day of Sandy Hook. I wasn't out on the street. It was a Friday. And so I was doing bulletins on 98 Rock. And there were second graders this time, that time. Now fourth graders, turns out, this time. And so you're thinking, oh, my God, these are second graders. These are elementary school, young kids, for God's sake. And you think, is anything going to happen to prevent this? It didn't happen 10 years ago. It remains to be seen. It's going to happen now. I'm not a betting man, but if I wouldn't bet on it. That's for the thing. And so you put your emotions in the box, and then you try to gather as much information from people who want to talk to you. Look, there may also be, and Perry Hall was a good example of that. There were a lot of parents showing up to find their kid and want to know if their kid is safe. They don't necessarily want to talk to a reporter. And so it's one of those situations where you have to take no for an answer. Okay, you don't want to talk. You'll have a story later. Just, come find me and that sort of thing. And so you don't, you operate, you do your job, but at the same time, you operate with a lot of sensitivity because, these people are all undergoing the worst moments of their lives.
Now, it was... I obviously remember the Perry Hall day as if it were yesterday. I think I've told the story a number of times. We were with the Kevin Kamenetz, and I were with school superintendent at Woodlawn High.
Right.
And we got the call. It was the first day of school, and we obviously rushed away from Woodlawn, had my team meet us at Perry Hall. And, Nestor, Rob alludes to the chaos and the importance of information. I remember we had the police chief. We had the school superintendent. We had the county executive, and we may have had, I can't recall, we may have had Dr. Branch as the health officer with us as well.
But there's 100 police cars there, right?
Yeah. With,
literally, and there's 500 parents and there's kids everywhere.
Hundreds of parents.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was Dallas Dance's first day on the job.
It was his first day on the job. So his first day as school superintendent. Mm-hmm. So Total Canal, a couple of real stars that day. The principal, I think, was Brian Gonzalez at the time. Magnificent job managing that side of the equation. I remember saying, and I talk to this often when I speak with communication students out in Ron Snyder's class at Towson University. I remember a couple of things, saying a couple of things as we got ready to walk out to this. I mean, at this point, it's not just Rob and Jane and others that we know. It's CNN. I mean, everybody's showing up.
All hands on deck. Folks from Washington, National,
Washington Post, the whole thing. And I remember saying, guys, a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, the minute we open these doors to walk out to the side of this building for this press conference, all of the cameras and all of the cell phones are running. So as awful as this sounds, because it's a grim moment anyway, but we're aware, and we've all seen this enough, that very often in times of stress or times of great sadness, people as a defense mechanism will smile. It's just something, you know, you'll feel uncomfortable and you'll just sort of get a wry smile. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, guys, remember, it's easy to get nervous, and the reaction to that is smile. You cannot smile the moment these doors open, because that will become the story and that will go viral. I know you're sad. I know you're broken. Don't be afraid to put that on display. I also recall saying, and I can't remember if it was Kevin or Chief Johnson that said this, but I said, Rob, to what you're addressing, I said, you have to understand, be very upfront and tell them, this is what we know now.
Right.
It may change. We're not in any, be upfront. We're not going to mislead you, but understand we're giving you, this is chaos. This is sort of that fog of war situation. Mm-hmm. We're giving you what you know, what we know, and it may change. What, Rob, tied into all of this, what's in your 30 plus year career now, and you've been very gracious, you have to get to work. What are one or two stories that stick with you?
Oh boy. There are a few there's more than one or two, but there was a fire in East Baltimore that I covered in October of 2012. And it was an early morning house fire. Five members of a family were killed. And we were there. I was actually called in early. I didn't work the mornings at the time. Go over there and cover it. And it wound up, you know, you talk to witnesses and everything like that. We wound up, a whole bunch of us were interviewing what turned out to be the great-grandmother of the family. And this woman was, with remarkable grace and poise, talked to not only me, but Jen Franciotti, a whole gaggle of reporters. I think Mike Hsu was there and everything like that. I actually was close enough to her so that I put my arm around her as I'm holding my microphone to talk to this woman. And she was describing all of those she lost, and then also her great-grandson, who was an infant, who was in the crib and was the only survivor of this fire. And it was taken to Hopkins Children's Hospital. And I just kept the way the grandmother spoke about that. A couple of months later, it happened to be the day of the Sandy Hook school shooting. I'm off duty. I'm at the gym. I'm on the elliptical listening to WBL TV 11 News at 5 o'clock as I'm working out on the elliptical. And Donna Hamilton reads an update on this fire. the baby died. And from 2 months ago. Now, this is on a day when, you know, 21st graders were killed. And I had to keep it together being on the air talking about that. I lost it. I mean, I just was sobbing uncontrollably. And it still hits me. And that's one of a number of stories that sticks with me. I'll tell you another story that sticks with me, and it was early in my career, but it was probably one of the first big, I mean, I did breaking news in Watertown, New York. I covered City Hall, did everything like that, including a fire along the middle of January, in the middle of an ice storm at a store along the St. Lawrence River.
I was going to say you shoveled a lot if you were.
Well, yeah, you shoveled. You also put. You also were putting salt down as you were going on the air, so you didn't slip. But in this incident, this one from 1989, I was just a month into my duties at WHP in Harrisburg, the Camp Hill prison riots. For 3 days, this prison was burning. One of the things I will always remember at the end of night one, around 11 o'clock at night, I was about among the gaggle. The corrections commissioner comes out. The man says, the man named David Owens, Bob Casey Sr. was the governor. And he says, the situation is under control. When you can clearly see behind him, smoke and flames coming up from behind the prison. You know, we asked him about that. Said, no, we're under control. They insisted.
And I figured, okay,
I'm going to be back here. And I was due to have Thursday and Friday off. And I had worked a marathon shift that night and also a marathon shift the night before. That was the night the Pennsylvania House of Representatives approved their Abortion Control Act, which became the basis of Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And so I had fed material to CBS radio. It was really the first time I did that. I think I made $600 or $700 that week feeding to CBS radio news. And lo and behold, I go home and sleep the day Thursday. I'm up eating dinner. I'm watching Peter Jennings. They interrupt Peter. The ABC affiliate interrupts Peter Jennings. A friend, a guy who I later worked with, John Rep, sportscaster up there, since retired, did the bulletin because everybody else was out at dinner. There's Camp Hill prison is up in flames again. The rioting has resumed, and John did the bulletin. And I immediately call my newsroom, and she says, Kathy Markle was my colleague there, said, come in, you know, we'll tell you where to go. And that night I anchored, and that is one of those stories that every October 25th through the 27th, I always think about. And that's, you know, it's 34 years ago or 33 years ago, but it still sticks in my mind.
Remarkable career, Rob. As we let you get to work, where can people find you? We know they find you on 1090 AM.
Yeah, and
101.5. Where else can they find Rob Lang?
If you were looking for the social media, it's at reporter Rob Lang on Twitter, one word. Also, Robert Lang, WBAL on Facebook. That's where you'll find news stories, a little bit of analysis, and an occasional cat picture.
Hey man, give Wyckoff my best. And hey, you know, my wife, when we had our cat about a year and a half, our current cat, yeah. Nala, we call her Bugs Bunny for short.
Right.
My wife saw the cat wheel, the hamster wheel. You know,
yeah, sure.
Like a big wheel. And
yeah,
my wife got her the wheel, and Don took me over to Franco's and got me a bookmaker, and I brought her home some shrimp. She likes shrimp, and she loves fried chicken from Rofo. I have not.
Well, there you go.
She loves fried chicken from Rofo.
Well, that's her preferred meal.
It's her preferred meal.
Shrimp and fried chicken from Rofo.
So we have.
Does she like Western fries?
No. Not yet. No, she's not.
We've had that discussion, Rob.
She's a meat eater. So my wife got her on the wheel. She now gets on the wheel and runs on the wheel on her own.
Oh, there you go.
We have video of it. She does it in the middle of the night.
Wow.
She's such a beautiful creature. So we share the love of animals.
We do.
Nestor, you haven't lived until you've seen the kind of food. You're a foodie. Mrs. Lang can do the food thing.
Look,
can
my she wife, not, Rob? My, look, I am, I hit gold, struck gold when I met Julie and married her. She's, first of all, she's Italian. So the Italian cooking is, but baked goods is the thing. She seems to think that I need them to get people to like me. And, I would bring them into the station. The news director who hired me, Mark Miller, I can quote him now, who's now working for Howard County, had the cookies, and his exact words early in said, God damn it, I hired the wrong Lang. So that was the thing. It has kept me employed. you know, that's among other things.
I'm having the owners of the Oven Bird Bakery on later this week as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Keeler Kyle is going to be coming down. So I'm learning about panettone. I'm learning about the Morning Glory muffins and the cookies and whatnot, the croissant and all that. Mm-hmm. And there's delicious English muffins down in Little Italy. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive. Rob Lang doing it over at WBAL, the news leader at 1090 and 101.5. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.